CMO Roundtable,
the podcast where we talk to CMOs and marketing professionals to find out what's working, what isn't, and how you can leverage their expertise to improve your marketing and conversions. Now, let's welcome our host, number one best-selling author and co-founder of Conversion Fanatics, Justin Christensen.
All right, welcome everybody. This is your host, Justin Christensen from CMO Roundtable. And today, as always, we've got a fantastic guest. Our guest today is the CEO of OMG Commerce. He leads a team of SEO and SEM professionals who manage Google shopping campaigns for e-commerce companies of all sizes. He speaks regularly at e-commerce events like IRCE, Traffic and Conversion Summit, and e-commerce All-Stars. He's also the host of E-Commerce Evolution podcast aimed at bringing you what's new and what's next in the world of e-commerce. So without further ado, Brett Curry, how are you doing, my friend?
Justin, I'm doing great, man. How are you?
Oh, doing fantastic. It's a Monday at the time of recording this, so dealing with the normal weekend catch-up stuff.
You know, it's funny. Just speaking of Monday, I've got to throw this in. We do a quick stand-up meeting on Monday mornings, and one of my employees came to me today and said, "Well, I bet you're doing good because today is your favorite day of the week." And I had to pause for a minute. I thought, "Really?" But I do. I don't know. I'm just like trying to compensate. But I always come into the meetings like, "Happy Monday! So excited to be here." You know, so I try to get the team pumped up. So I've got them convinced that this is my favorite day of the week.
Well, whatever perceptions are good, I guess.
I guess so. Yeah.
Exactly. Awesome. Well, I appreciate you being on the show, and hopefully this will be a good one, and I have no doubt it won't be. In 30 seconds or so, what's kind of a little bit more about your background and how you got into the e-commerce world?
Yeah, sure. So I'm actually an offline marketing guy first. So when I was going to college, I started working for a small radio station selling ads, commission only. And while I was doing that, I just kind of fell in love with marketing, fell in love with the copywriting piece. I was mainly selling, but it was a small station, so I did a little bit of everything. And just kind of fell in love with, you know, the psychology of what makes an ad work or not work, and how do you approach this. Also found that a lot of business owners didn't really have the answers themselves. Like they wanted more customers, they wanted more traffic, didn't know how to get it themselves. So I transitioned to a marketing major. I think that was mildly helpful. I did get introduced, though, to Jay Abraham. Not personally, but introduced to Jay Abraham's work. Are you a Jay Abraham fan by chance?
Of course.
Yeah. So my uncle bought like every one of his courses. My uncle's an entrepreneur as well. And so I devoured that stuff. Drove my wife crazy. I listened to it so much. Really got into Dan Kennedy as well. And so really like looking at this direct response marketing and strategic alliances, and just my head kind of exploded, and it was fun for me. I really enjoyed it. So I opened an agency right out of college, which is ill advised in most cases. But we were in a position where we could do it. We took the risk. My wife and I did. I was married at the time. Started an agency doing mainly TV and radio because that's what I knew. But in 2004, it was an e-commerce client. They came to me and said, I was doing just general marketing consulting for them, and they said, "Hey, do you know SEO?" And I said, "No, I do not know anything about SEO." And they said, "Well, we'll pay you to learn." And I said, "All right, I'm in." So they paid me. I learned. I got them ranking in the top 10 for the search term brochures, and using tactics that no longer work at all today.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I was hooked. I was like totally hooked on search. And so then fast forward 2010, started Online Marketing Giant with a partner, Chris Brewer, and then everybody called us OMG, so we initially kind of shifted, and so our e-commerce division is OMG Commerce, but it kind of began slowly, started working with a few e-commerce companies here and there, and then I just fell in love with it as well, because the beauty of e-commerce is you can track everything end-to-end, so you can see click, conversion, it eliminates a lot of the guesswork that I was always running to with like local businesses, you know, car dealers. We'd run ads, and you know, no one would know what worked or what didn't work. So the beauty of e-commerce is you can see the whole picture. And so really e-commerce has been my focus then for about the last 4.5 or 5 years thereabouts.
Well, you're really seeing a spike the last couple.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, e-commerce has really exploded. It's by far the fastest growing side of our business. And it's going well. So
awesome. So behind the scenes, we always like to ask people behind the scenes, especially CEOs of, you know, companies, is what's it look like behind the scenes at OMG Commerce? What's a typical week look like?
Yeah. So, you know, it has changed so much. I mean, when we started the company in 2010, my business partner and I, we almost thought it would be like he and I, you know, gunslinging, closing deals, forming joint venture partnerships, and then like a couple of admin people to keep us straight and keep everything organized. But as we got into it, we realized, man, we need a team. And so we've been building a team that's really been growing recently. So we're up to, I believe, 17 or 18 now on the team. And so my week has kind of transitioned over the last year and a half, especially. We've got a COO now who is kind of running the staff. I still am very involved in managing our paid search specialists and hiring and things like that. But, you know, now it's more about – I have a lot of internal meetings that I go to make sure teams are on track. And, mm-hmm. you know, we got some core philosophies, one of which is constant improvement. So I'm always trying to – I feel like one of my jobs is pushing the team to, okay, how do we get better? And the three questions we always ask is, you know, what worked, what didn't, and what's next? And we want to ask that kind of each month of a campaign that we have for a client. And then, you know, if we ever transition away from a client, we want to ask those questions, but constantly pushing and trying to get better. And so so that's a big part of what I do. I'm probably 30% of my time is business development. I want to expand that to about 60% of my time. That's the goal. Mm-hmm. So we're still heavily into the building out, refining processes and procedures and making sure, you know, the system that is OMG works well. And so, yeah, man, lots of stuff going on.
Lots of moving parts.
Indeed.
This whole agency world.
I know. Yeah. You know what it's like.
Yeah. You guys are just a few short of how many we've got on staff, but yeah, it's very similar.
Nice. So,
In terms of your company's marketing or even your client campaigns, is there something that just eats at you and keeps you up at night?
Man, that is a good question. You know, one of the things that I don't know if it keeps me up at night, but I think about it a lot is attribution modeling. And I don't know how much you get into this. I'm assuming maybe a decent amount, but you know, it's like the age old question. Well, I say age old, maybe only a few years old, honestly. But how do we attribute conversions? So are we first click, last click, or some combination thereof? You know, I think most e-commerce companies, and when I say most, I mean like 90%+ are all last click model. And what that means, I know you know, Justin, yep. But if anybody doesn't, you know, if you have a conversion, so someone signs up for something on your site or they make a purchase, you know, that's a conversion. When that happens, what traffic source are you giving the credit to? So last click means whatever that last traffic source is, they get all the credit. So maybe in someone's journey to conversion, they click on an AdWords ad and then they come back directly and then they click on an organic listing and then they convert. Well, in last click, then that organic click gets all of the credit. Mm-hmm. And that's something I think is kind of, I think last click attribution, that ship has sailed. I think it's time to look at better attribution modeling. We're using time decay and then data driven, which is kind of a combination, a decent amount. And so that's something I think, you know, I talked about how much I love e-commerce and the fact you can see kind of beginning to end. There are still some ambiguities, though, and part of it comes back to attribution. And so if you can get that better, then you can, I think, make better decisions. So that's something I think about a lot.
Especially the offline to mobile, or the online to the desktop to mobile attribution.
Yeah, as yeah. Well, cross-device, absolutely cross-device. And so we're Google Premier partners. We have a couple of Google reps that we meet with frequently, and they come to our offices. And they were just here about a month ago, and they were talking about how Google's really improving on their cross-device conversion tracking. And so, yeah, it looks like that's getting better. But, yeah, that's part of the equation too. Like how do we make sense of which of my marketing channels is working and which is not, which of my messages is working and which is not. And so while that's so much clearer today than it was even 5 years ago, it's still not 100% clear. And one of my favorite quotes, I don't know if you ever pay attention to a guy named Avinash Kaushik, but he's a former Googler. He's kind of the analytics evangelist, but he always says that your goal should be to be less wrong, right?
Yep.
So you're never going to be 100% right. Just if you continually try to be less wrong, you know, you're moving in the right direction.
Yeah, to be less wrong. That's a good one.
Yep.
I see that all the time in the optimization world.
Yes, indeed. Indeed.
So since you're a traditional, you're kind of a traditional media guy, I mean, as your start, Yep. So what are your thoughts on TV and traditional media going all online? I mean, there's been talks. Gary Vaynerchuk is probably the most prominent person that has been very outspoken about this. But what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I don't know if you saw this. I just got an email. I was on another podcast. I forgot to mention it. But YouTube television or YouTube mm-hmm. TV, I think it's called. Did you get an email
I've seen it, yeah.
Yeah, so it's new. I mean, I just saw the email last week, I think. But now I think it's New York, Philadelphia, San Francisco, Chicago, maybe L.A. You can pay something like $35 a month and get your local channels and some of the top tier cable networks like ESPN is part of the mix. So when I saw it, I was like, man, I'm in on mm-hmm. this. Of course, it's not in my market. I'm in Missouri, but
so you're gonna be last. Anyway. You're gonna be last.
Yeah, we'll get that in like 3 years. It's going to be great. But I saw that. I thought, oh, man, that's going to be fantastic. There's no reason from a technology and a customer demand standpoint that shouldn't happen, right? If you look at younger people, they want to consume most media on a mobile device or at least they don't want to pay cable rates, right, or satellite. Uh-huh. Rates. I've got so many millennial friends, and I don't have that many, honestly. I'm a little bit past a millennial, not a lot, but by a few years. But I know so many millennials that don't pay for cable. They don't pay for satellite. What's interesting, though, and because I'm still a little bit connected with the TV space, my father-in-law is works for a CBS affiliate. I still have a couple clients that I consult with just because I've known them forever, and I still do a little consulting. So, you know, there's a lot of money invested into the old way of mm-hmm. doing TV, right? Cable companies have a ton of cash. The main networks have a lot of cash. The networks will probably go wherever the consumers go. So I don't know. I think the only thing slowing that down and preventing that from maybe happening faster, I think, is the old dogs, you know, the old dinosaur media players, and how much are they going to try and be able to dig in their heels and prevent change? But I think from a technology standpoint and what customers want, you know, that all indications are pointing towards TV online, absolutely.
Awesome. Well, you're big into the Google Shopping space. Why did you choose that, or what's the big benefits of having, you know, Google Shopping? Are there any insights into that? And why need to turn to that?
If you're selling any physical products, if you're an e-commerce company or you have an e-commerce portion of your business, then I think you need to consider Google Shopping, and also known as product listing ads. So Google Shopping is kind of the campaign type. Product listing ads are the ad units. But you know, if you search for a product on Google, so looking for Nike shoes or something, and you see the little product ads with title, price, you know, that's Google Shopping. It just works. It works very well. I've seen few things that work as consistently as Google Shopping. You know, we see anywhere from 300% return on ad spend up to 1400% return on ad spend. So what that means is you spend a dollar, you get $3 to $14 in sales on that $1. It connects people that are actively looking for your product or service. And if you're priced right and you have good images and things like that, you know, it can be a really quality click. I was first introduced to it about the time it switched from a free platform to a paid platform. So mm-hmm. it went from Frugal back in the day, I'm sure you remember that, to Google Shopping. And when it did, I had a friend of mine in the t-shirt business, and he called me one day. I think I was actually on Skype, but he's like, dude, I'm getting a 10x return on Google Shopping. And so that was kind of one of those, you know, stop the presses thing for me. And so I dove in at that time, introduced a few of my clients to it, and we just identified it as being a really powerful option. And so we've tried to kind of establish our agency as a leader in Google Shopping. And so that's the topic I speak about the most. I spoke at Traffic and Conversion, which is where you and I met. Talked about Google Shopping there. I'm talking about Google Shopping and kind of full funnel search when I go to IRCE in Chicago in June. I've spoken at Ezra Firestone's events on Google Shopping. And actually, if someone really wants to nerd out and dig into Google Shopping, just type in Google Shopping Guide as a Google search. And a guide I published with Shopify is the number one result. So it's the ultimate guide to Google Shopping. I wrote it, but Shopify published it. So check that out. But yeah, it's a phenomenal tool. So I can go in deeper if you want, or if that's good. It's no
yeah, review. Yeah. Go in deeper. We always like more stuff.
Sweet, sweet. So a couple of things that we recommend is, you know, with Google Shopping, you have the ability to see performance at a product level or a SKU level. So, you know, with Google Shopping, they're product listing ads. So every ad unit, every product creates a new ad unit. And so we like to track that. And we want to see, you know, from how many impressions to how many clicks to the click-through rate to the cost, and most importantly, return on ad spend for every product. Mm-hmm. And this is important because we found that some products are great at introducing someone to the brand, right? It could be like if you think about Lost Leaders back in the grocery store model, or just a high searched, high volume product. So some clients have these entry products that are great to get someone into the funnel and introduce to their brand. So that's nice to be able to see the product level performance on a product like that, and to be able to push that in appropriate ways. Also looking at, what are your top sellers? What are your money makers in terms of maybe margin or ticket size, and pushing those a little bit differently. So we actually form what we call a full funnel strategy for Google Shopping, where we look at kind of top, middle, and bottom of the funnel. We bid a little bit differently in all of those categories. Google Shopping kind of tends to be lower in the funnel anyway, because it's when someone's actively looking for products. But we've got a client that sells outdoor cooking gear, and so top of the funnel for them might be something like pellet grill, right? So yeah. I don't know what I need. I just know I want a pellet grill. I want to start looking, right? So that'd be kind of top of the funnel. Middle of the funnel is maybe where I start to incorporate brand. So I'm looking for Traeger. I'm looking for Green Mountain. I'm looking for Camp Chef, something like that. So I type in the brand. And then when I'm lower in the funnel, it's like, I'm looking for brand, model number, part number potentially, and so you can kind of tailor different campaigns for every part of the funnel. And so when you do that, the returns are usually very, very good on Google Shopping. A couple of exceptions, some kind of random apparel companies may struggle a little bit with Google Shopping. It can still work. I found that if you've got a product where someone doesn't know they need it, or they're not actively searching for it, where they kind of just need to see it to know if they need it. Like we got a client that sells specialty sports stuff. And so they were selling these Seattle Seahawks UGG boots for a while, not UGG brand, but like UGG boots. As one of those things where nobody's probably typing that in, right? But if you saw it on Facebook or something, you'd say, oh, I've got to have that. So those types of products aren't as great on Google Shopping, but most products do very, very well there.
Nice. Yeah. Do you have any big marketing wins that you've learned or in the last year that just really jumped out at you that you care to share?
Yeah, that's great. There's so many. I mean, and we spend so much time on Google Shopping that it is a lot of it is related to that. But one of the things that I love, and I just did a recording with another podcast talking about this, and on my own podcast, E-commerce Evolution, talking about Shoppable TrueView. And this is a new-ish platform, like a year ago or so. But it's basically you can run a YouTube TrueView ad, which is the pre-roll ads on YouTube that you can skip after 5 seconds. It's running one of those ads, but then having your product listing ads next to it. So on desktop, the ads would go kind of beside the video. On a mobile device, the product listing ads go below the video. We've found that to work exceptionally well as a remarketing vehicle. So, we're huge fans of segmenting your audience and creating detailed remarketing lists, from product page viewers to cart viewers, and breaking that down by recency, how recently were they on the site and things like that. We even like a list where you have someone who bought this product but not that product, so a bought X but not Y list. But if you have these remarketing lists and then you can target those lists with a video ad on YouTube that has your product listing ad next to it, we found it to be very effective. So often, meeting or beating the CPA targets, so cost per acquisition targets our clients have, or beating their return on ad spend targets. And it's just another way, you got so many people, this because you're a conversion rate specialist, even if you're phenomenal at conversion rate optimization. Still, most people aren't going to buy right when they come mm-hmm. to the page. I mean, on e-commerce, it could be to the tune of 98% or 99% that come to a page and don't buy. So remarket to them, and using mm-hmm. video plus Google Shopping has proven to be really effective. So it's something we're trying to do for every client when it makes sense. Not everybody has easy access to create video assets and ads, but that's a channel that we're very excited about.
Yeah, it sounds like a good one. I mean, you're tailoring it to a very, very specific audience and hitting them with all different ways to buy, essentially.
Yep, exactly. And we're testing that a little bit with, upper funnel traffic, so somebody who's maybe not, hasn't been to our site yet or to our client site yet. But that's been kind of hit or miss. We've seen some wins there, but it's a lot harder. Using it as a remarketing vehicle, though, is very powerful.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad we dug in deeper on that one.
Yeah.
You got any big lessons you've learned in the last year?
One of the things, and this has been kind of ongoing, and it's one of those things that we kind of had to learn this maybe in the first couple years of our business. So, this was maybe 4 or 5 years ago, but it becomes clearer all the time. And that's narrowing your focus and becoming a specialist in something. So I don't know if you ever dealt with this, but when we first started OMG, we were, because my business partner and I were, feel like we're pretty sharp marketers, right? We feel like we can figure stuff out. We're entrepreneurial. And so we were kind of like, hey, you need help with hosting? Sure. Need to build a website? Yeah, we'll help kind of map things out. We'll bring on some freelance developers. We'll build your sites for you. You need help with marketing? Of course. That was our kind of our bread and butter. But we were doing a little bit of everything. We really decided, we're great. We can be world class at search, both organic and paid search. And so why aren't we focusing more time there? And so that's what we really had to do. And it's kind of painful at first, but cutting off the other services, like, hey, let's get rid of this. This is a drain. We're not that good at it, if we're being honest with ourselves. Like, let's focus on what we're great at. Let's focus on search. And then for me, it's been, this is kind of painful because I like to control things a little bit. But also then looking at my time and saying, okay, I need to be selling. I need to be working on key accounts. I need to be working on strategy for those key accounts. And then I need to be working on strategy for OMG. And like everything else, I need to stop doing, because there are probably people that do that better than me, or at least as good, or at least it frees me up to do the things that I can be great at. And so narrowing the focus, both in your business and with your time, can have huge, huge rewards. And so we're really seeing that. It's been a great year last year. We're off to a pretty awesome start this year. And so just continuing to narrow that focus, that's one of the biggest lessons for me right now.
Yeah, I can relate to that.
Yeah. And I guess I would give one caveat of, but while you're still aware of new stuff, right? Because, I mean, you can't have tunnel vision, right? Because then you're going to get left behind and you're not going to see all the new stuff coming with the industry. So, I mean, you have to also have your finger on the pulse and be thinking about, like I mentioned before, that, what's working, what's not, what's next. So you've always got to be doing that. But it's just, trying to do too much or trying to be everything to everybody is a really – it's a losing proposition for sure.
Yeah, you just end up burning relationships trying to be everything to everybody.
Yep, no doubt.
So I'm an avid reader, obviously, and an author, but do you have any favorite books that have jumped out to you that you've read recently?
Actually, I have several. If we want to focus on e-commerce, or just commerce in general, this actually isn't that much e-commerce. I'm a sports fan, so I love basketball. Yeah, good. I love basketball and football, baseball, like it all. My son is almost 15. He's a little bit of an entrepreneur. He's got a little coffee roasting business that it's doing okay. He's having fun with it. But we share an Audible account. So did you ever listen to audiobooks on Audible?
Yep.
Yeah. So a huge Audible fan. I love to read as well, but I'm so busy that I've got a 30-minute commute each way, so I can go through a lot of Audible books. So my son actually found this book called Shoe Dog by Phil Knight.
Yeah, I love that book.
Isn't it phenomenal? I mean, it reads like a novel. I mean, there was a few times when I pulled into my driveway while listening to the book, you know, my way home, and I was like, I didn't want to get out of the car because I wanted to finish hearing the story that, that Phil Knight was telling. But just to me, it was a reminder of, okay, even the great companies face some really, really hard, crazy stuff. There's something about hearing from another entrepreneur and hearing, you know, the near-death experiences of the company and how they innovated, and also even how like blind luck played a part. And not that that's all that instructive, other than just saying that, hey, you know, sometimes you got to catch breaks. But love that book. So Shoe Dog by Phil Knight, highly, highly recommend it. I'm going through, I'm not finished yet, but I'm listening to The Everything Store about Amazon by Brad Stone. That is a good one as well. Just kind of peels back the curtain and gets into the mind and psyche of Jeff Bezos a little bit, and just how relentless, absolutely relentless and fearless and tenacious and brilliant that guy is. Not too much dissimilar from Steve Jobs. You know, they certainly had similar.
They have their similarities for sure.
Yeah. Both could run someone into the ground and you know, chew someone up and spit them out. Also, you get people saying, hey, I did my best work when working with Jeff Bezos, or I did my best work working for Steve Jobs. But The Everything Story, there's a really, really good one. So I highly recommend that. And then another one that's kind of not as maybe directly business focused, but it's called Ego is the Enemy by Ryan Holiday. And Ryan Holiday wrote Growth Hackers. Mm-hmm. He's a marketing guy, so I mean, that's kind of his claim to fame. I forgot the name of the book now. Maybe it's just called Growth Hackers. Really good. But he wrote a book called Ego is the Enemy, and just talking about how, you know, most of the things that trip us up in life is our own ego, and so learning to manage that. So that's a really good one as well.
Awesome. Yeah. So I just got a couple official questions left for you, I guess. But what are your predictions for digital marketing in the next year?
Yeah, boy, that's a great one. You know, it's going to continue. I think a real safe prediction is going to continue to garner more of the ad dollars for a lot of clients. I think more and more companies are going to shift money away from some of the traditional media outlets into digital. So I definitely see that happening. You know, I think we're going to just continue to see improvements from different analytics companies, Google Analytics being one of the leaders, you know, in getting better at closing the loops of how are we tracking performance, how are we tracking attribution. And so, you know, seeing that come together. One of the things that you know, I heard Ryan Dice talk about, Ryan Dice from Digital Marketer, talked about at the Traffic and Conversion Summit, was that, you know, really, you know, as we look at automation and artificial intelligence and, you know, AR and VR, you know, augmented reality, virtual reality, all these new things, that new technologies that are being introduced, I think a lot of people think, well, eventually everything's just going to run on autopilot, right? We'll just have virtual, or we'll just have, you know, AI running all of our marketing campaigns, and that'll be it. But while technology has made some things way easier with marketing, right? Mm-hmm. So like now we can get a video out to tons and tons of people. We can become a celebrity online much easier than we, you know, could have got on the TV, you know, 10 or 20 years ago. There's also things have gotten so complex, and the number of advertising channels and the way you can structure advertising now, I think it's actually created a greater need for digital marketers. So for guys like you and me to come in and help with strategy and help putting all the pieces together. So I do think that, you know, technology is going to continue to make some things easier, like attribution modeling and analytics, and even some of the kind of rote tasks, some of the kind of just numbers related tasks of marketing. But I really think there's going to continue to be a demand for people who can help companies navigate the waters of digital marketing. So I know I didn't maybe go out on a huge limb there.
You did. Because, cool. I mean, there's so many people that just don't understand it because it's changing so fast, and they need help that are people like us that are specialized in specific areas.
Yep. people that focus on strategy and know what tools to use, how to use them, when to use them, things like that.
Awesome. So last final question, official question, is if you had one tip for people with their marketing, what would it be?
Man, just one tip. Maybe think of like 10. Well, I could go nerdy and talk about getting your data right, or yeah. I could be fun. I've been nerdy long enough. Let me go fun. I would look at really zeroing in on your message, right? Because your message impacts everything. So while we primarily, you know, we focus on driving traffic through paid search and organic search and content marketing and you know, Google Shopping, like we talked about, still those things don't really work if someone gets to your site and they see a bland, ambiguous product with a message that doesn't resonate, without any real clear differentiation on why would I want this product versus another product, you know? Mm-hmm. And so really understanding what's the story behind my product, why is it unique? If it's not unique, then I better find a reason, create a reason, create some uniqueness. But really understanding your story. And actually, another resource I'll recommend. Did you get to hear Donald Miller at Traffic and Conversion Summit by chance?
I didn't. I was tied in my booth the whole time.
You were working the booth. Yeah. I was actually speaking at the same time that he was in different rooms. But he has a company called Story Brand, and they talk about, you know, creating what's the story behind your brand, and the faster, more effectively you can communicate your story, the better. He's actually also got a great book called A Million Miles in 1,000 Years, also a great book to check out as well. But anyway, I think that's really critical. Like, you know, do we show the benefits of our product? Do we have social proof around our product? So bringing in product reviews for e-commerce or testimonials or things like that. But I think just really focusing in on your message, because that makes my job so much easier.
Makes my job so much easier.
I know. It gives you something to work with. Like, what is the reason why we exist, and why are these products so great? So really focusing in on the story, I think that's something that people forget. And I think that's also something you forget, like, you know, if you start looking at just technology and AI and where things are headed in the industry, you know, you can't really automate like a powerful story. You can't automate a brand message that resonates and make people say, yes, I want the Nike shoe more than I want Adidas or something else, you know? Mm-hmm. So focusing in on your message and your story, huge, huge impact there.
Awesome. Well, there you have it, folks. That's all I had for you. So Brett, sweet. I really appreciate you being on the show. How can folks connect with you or find more information about OMG?
Yeah. Love to connect. I am on Twitter at Brett Curry. Two T's and Brett, two R's and Curry. So check me out there. I'm not crazy active on Twitter, but I am there. But check us out, omgcommerce.com. You can connect there. We've got a form to fill out. Would love to meet with you and chat anything and everything search if you have an interest. Check out the E-Commerce Evolution podcast, so ecommerceevolution.com. Just did an episode with you, my friend, not long ago. It crushed it. Got great feedback on that one.
The best episode, obviously.
Yes. It was very good. It was very good. So you got to check that one out. But yeah, those are the best places. I'm on LinkedIn, of course, but, you know, don't spend a ton of time there. So mainly OMG Commerce and E-Commerce Evolution.
Perfect. We'll link all of that in the show notes. And all of this, I've got over a page of notes written here from our little chat. And those listening, if you like this episode, be sure to like us, rate us, share us, and check out some of our other episodes, as well as go to omgcommerce.com, check out what Brett's doing there, and you know, hire him if you want to get your stuff some massive ROI on Google Shopping. And that's all we got for you today, so check us out on another episode, and take care. Thanks.
Thanks so much for listening to the CMO Roundtable. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to rate us, subscribe, and give us a share. For more information about how you can accelerate your marketing results and to request your in-depth conversion analysis, visit conversionfanatics.com.